At least 58 people now dead, more than 500 people wounded.
17 fires burning right now in the state, 5,700 structures destroyed, at least 35 people dead.
I mean, this was a massive church just outside of San Juan with a congregation of 3,000 people. Maria just shredded this building.
ISIS released a new video today showing the execution of 21 Coptic Christians kidnapped in Libya.
Two suicide bombings killed more than 40 people on one of the holiest days on the Christian calendar.
North Korea fires yet another missile, but Pyongyang claims this one will be able to hit the U.S. mainland, striking cities like Los Angeles, Denver, even New York and Boston.
They will be met with fire and fury like the world has never seen.
The world seems so unstable, so insecure. Everything is changing way too fast. But there are some things that are steadfast, things that never change: God and His Word. Randy Reams is pastor of Kindred Bible Church in Nampa, Idaho. Join Pastor Randy now as he shares truths from God's unchanging Word.
First Samuel, still in chapter 22, this time starting in verse 6. Now, it's a long section, but I want to give you the whole story in context. So when you're there, please stand. It is our tradition. But we will read all the way from verse 6 to verse 23. When Saul heard that David and the men that were with him had been discovered. Now, Saul was sitting in Gibeah under the tamarisk tree on the height. It was up on the top part of the hill anyway, with his spear in his hand, and all his servants were around him. And Saul said to his servants who stood with him, "Hear now, O Benjamites," most likely because Saul was a Benjamite, everybody on his cabinet were from his neighborhood, we'll put it that way. "Will the son of Jesse also give to all of you fields and vineyards?" Who's the son of Jesse?
David,
okay, he's saying, is David the one who will make you rich, I guess? "Will he make you commanders of thousands and commanders of hundreds? For all of you have conspired against me so that there is no one who discloses to me when my son makes a covenant with the son of Jesse, and there's none of you who are sorry for me or discloses to me that my son has stirred up my servant against me to lie in ambush as it is this day." Then Doeg the Edomite, who was standing by the servants of Saul, said, "I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob, to Abimelech, the son of Ahitub. He inquired of the Lord for him, gave him provisions, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Then the king sent someone to summon Abimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's household, the priests who were in Nob. And they all came to the king. Saul said, 'Listen now, O son of Hatib.' And he answered, 'Here am I, Lord.' And then Saul said to them, 'Why have you and the son of Jesse conspired against me in that you have given him bread and a sword and have inquired of God for him so that he would rise up against me by lying in ambush even to this day?'" Verse 14, "And Abimelech said to the king, 'And who among your servants is as faithful as David, even the king's son-in-law, who is the captain of your guard, who is honored in your house? Did I just begin to inquire of God for him today? Far be it from me. Do not let the king impute anything to his servants or anyone to his household of his father, and your servant knows nothing of all this whole affair.' But the king said, 'You will surely die, Elimelech, and you and all your father's household.' And the king said to the guards who were attending him, 'Turn around and put the priests of the Lord to death, because of their hand is also with David, because they knew that he was fleeing, and he did not reveal it to me.' But the servants of the king were not willing to put forth their hands to attack the priests of the Lord. Then the king said to Doeg, 'You turn around and attack the priests.' So Doeg the Edomite turned around and attacked the priest. And he killed that day 85 men who wore the linen ephod. And he struck Nob, the city of the priest, with the edge of the sword, both women, men, children, infants, ox, donkey, sheep. He struck with the edge of the sword. The son of Abimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, I hope I said that right, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar told David what Saul had killed, all the priests of the Lord. And David said to Abiathar, I knew on that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul. And I have brought about death of every person in your father's household. Stay with me, do not be afraid, for they seek my life. They seek my life, seeks your, the one who seeks my life seeks yours. For you will be safe with me. You may be seated. So you recall, right? David kills Goliath, becomes famous, all right? In that sense, he's been playing his music in the presence of Saul to calm him down when he's upset. And Saul doesn't like him, gets jealous of him at first. And then in chapter 18, we find out he's afraid of David because the Lord is with David. So he chucks the spear at David a couple times, trying to pin him to the wall. David goes on the run, and he runs to Samuel, Ramah, right? And there he's safe. Saul sends some guys along to go get him. Those messengers get in the school of the prophets. They prophesy a couple times. He sends different groups. Then he himself goes to get him there. And then again, he prophesies. But David is not satisfied there. He goes back to Gibeah, which where the king's palaces is, to speak to Jonathan, to ask Jonathan what? He wanted to know, went to Jonathan, why is this happening to me? What did I do? And that, of course, gets him nowhere. And then he flees. He flees to Gath. That's the hometown of Goliath. But even the wicked don't want him. Okay? And he leaves there, has to cross the valley of Elah, where he killed Goliath. And along that way has an epiphany, and writes Psalms 56 and another one. And it ends up in the cave of Adullam. There he writes a couple psalms, which we talked about last week. All right. And then the prophet Gad says, don't stay here. Move to this forest over here in Judah. All right. And that sort of brings us to where we are today. So the story sort of moves off of what David's doing now over to Saul. And Saul had heard that he was out in these cliffs. Of course, he's not there now. All right. Because the prophet told him to move. And look what Saul does. Okay. First of all, he's sitting there with his spear in his hand. That's not common for a king. Maybe a scepter, but not a spear. And so his court is in front of him. And he starts basically accusing him. Now look at court. Who's going to make you rich and famous? David? He's saying that sarcastically. He's saying, no, I'm the one that has the power to make you rich and famous. And then he goes on the victim routine. You read it. Everyone's conspired against me. Life's not fair. Matter of fact, if you really cared, you would have told me that Jonathan had made a covenant with the bad guy. All right? I mean, that's what he did. And he says this, no one feels sorry for me. He's maybe a little pity, or maybe he's manipulating. And then he accuses Jonathan of being the cause. Jonathan has turned David against me. Really, I thought it was because you were throwing a spear at him. You know what I mean? Okay, but that's the way he sees it. And that he's trying to ambush me. Matter of fact, he's still trying to ambush me with that phrase, even to this day. Okay, so he thinks David's out there hiding somewhere, encouraged by his son, to attack him when he's out there. And this is probably why he's got his spear with him all the time. Okay, and he's accusing his own court of being sort of conspirators in this project by the fact that they're not sharing information with him, okay? So he's got what I call today that victim mentality, okay? You got to be careful if you have that feeling. If you think you're the victim, be careful. We have to ask this question. So you're sharing your situation, and we all have situations, all right, where we are a victim, all right, in that sense. We're the victim maybe in that case. I understand that. But you have to ask yourself, why am I sharing this story, my situation with someone, okay? Now, I understand when you share a situation with someone that you say, I can relate.
I don't want to tell you, yeah, well, I've been there too. That's a different story. I understand that happens. And I think that's important at times that we do connect with people that way. But you got to be careful that you're not looking to be affirmed in your pity. You're not wanting someone to go, oh, you poor thing. Let's get real, though. When it's been hard, and when especially when you're the innocent party, right? You want people to go, oh, you are so right. Oh, you've been so abused. Oh, you poor thing, they didn't treat you right. I understand, but sometimes, I think, and this is Saul's case, he's trying to manipulate, right? He's trying to say, everybody's against me. You don't care about me. You don't feel sorry for me. You're not doing this. I think he's not really looking for pity because he can care less what you think. He'd just throw a spear at you if he wants. I think that he's looking to manipulate. So in the crowd now Doeg, this guy named Doeg, we found out in chapter 21 when David was in Nob, that Doeg was there, and he's Doeg's chief shepherd. So he's the boss of all the lowliest people. Okay? That's being the dishwasher, the busboy, the janitor. That's down here, the mailroom guy. Well, he's the top mailroom. He's the top janitor. He's the top dishwasher, this kind of thing. And he happened to be there in Nob when David goes there, tells his lies to the priest of Nob to get food and a weapon. Remember, he tells Elimelech that he's on a secret mission from Saul. Remember that? So Doeg was there. So now Doeg's had this information, right? Why does he speak up now? You ready? Who's the ability to make you rich and famous? Right? To get you out of the mailroom. To move you up from being dishwasher. Because he's had this information all this time and he hasn't shared it. So he shares this with Saul. And again, he uses the same language that Saul does. Saul doesn't say David, does he? Son of Jesse. I'm not going to use the guy's name. Okay, I'm just going to call him the son of Jesse. And so Doeg uses that same thing. He says, man, I saw him there. And matter of fact, when I saw that, Elimelech inquired of the Lord for him, gave him food, gave him sword. Okay, that's not true. He added to what happened. Remember, nowhere in the story does Elimelech go to God on behalf of David. Because if he did, God, I'm sure God would have corrected David in his line, which he does later, okay? He doesn't inquire of the Lord for him, but he does give him food and does give him Goliath's sword. I don't know if Doeg knew it, but we know that Saul's afraid because God is with David. It tells us that. That's why he's afraid. Now, if you add to that fear, because he's been talking to God, maybe that's Doeg's, I don't know. So Saul sends for Elimelech and his whole family, 85 men, he sends them, sort of has an arraignment, if you know what that is, okay? And again, he refers to him not by his name, but son of Jehoiachin. You have, this is the indictment, you have, and the son of Jesse has, conspired against me by giving him food, giving him a sword, and inquiring of the Lord. Look at what Saul does. He says, so that he now applies motive to Elimelech's actions. I find that as I do counseling, when the victim comes to you, they often do that. They apply motive to the person. Well, the reason they fired me, they treated me this way is because it couldn't have anything to do with you. Okay, so he does motive here. You did this so that he can ambush me. What is interesting, though, to me, is Elimelech's response. He doesn't address the lie part of going before the Lord. He doesn't do that. Well, he sort of does, but what's the first thing he does? He defends David, not himself. You've just been accused of treason. Capital punishment is the death. And he doesn't defend himself first. He offends David, or defends David. He says, among all your servants, who is faithful like David? Who else you got in your household that hangs around that's faithful as he is? After all, he's your son-in-law and the captain over 1,000 of your guard. Let's get real. If you had 1,000 men, you probably could have killed him on the spot. That's a pretty good group of guys. Okay. So he defends David first. If you're I've never seen it yet. When somebody believes they're a victim, do they list the positive traits? You know what I'm saying? Now, wait a minute. That's the last thing Saul wants to hear. So let's assume you come home from work and your boss has just treated you poorly and awfully, unjustly so, and you come home and you share that with your spouse. Do you want your spouse to list the good parts, the good aspects of your boss? No. You're probably going to get pretty frustrated because what you're wanting from your spouse is a little bit of pity. I understand that. But it is interesting enough that I don't care what political party you're on, okay? If you feel that you're a victim of side A, I could come to you all day long with positive aspects about that, and 10-1, you'll go ad hominem on me and start calling me names, okay? So I don't know if this is the best response by the priest, is to list the positive qualities of the guy that the king thinks is out to get him. Okay? Realizing the king can have you killed. Then he does this. He doesn't say, man, I didn't inquire of the Lord for this guy. I didn't do that when he was there. He says, wait a minute. He's the captain of one of your thousands of troops. Of course I've inquired of the Lord for him before. Right? Before he goes into battle, it says he's inquired of the Lord, and we'll see this later. He never goes into that he didn't do it. He doesn't defend himself and say, King, he lied. He said he's on a mission from you. He never does that. He doesn't impugn David. Trust me, we'll get to that when we find David will not impugn Saul. Then he says this. He says, now, look, don't hold this against any of these other people here. Don't impute anything to me or these people. Because we didn't know anything. We didn't know he was on run from you. We thought he was still working for you when he showed up. Of course, Saul doesn't buy this. And gives orders to his guards to kill. And what kills me is Saul actually calls them this. Kill the priest of the Lord. And the guards are going, you got to be crazy. I mean, listen to what you just called them, Saul. I want you to realize at this point, as he's feeling like the victim, he is lying to himself. He is self-deceived to the point where he uses the words out of his mouth, kill the priest of the Lord. What do you think about that? Now, I know you don't, you're not grasping that right now. Until, young person, you think mom's treated you unjust. You know the Bible says you're supposed to honor your mom and dad. But honor seems to leave really quick when you think mom's been unjust to you and now you're hanging with your friends. And you're bad-mouthing and complaining or back-mouthing. Back in my day, my dad ever caught you mumbling under your breath. You got a backhand. But anyway, It's true. I remember one time my mom chasing my brother and I in the living room with a broom because she was going to lay it on us. But I guess that's abuse. I don't know. I'm just a victim. Anyway. Then all of a sudden, the idea that God says you got to honor mom, that just sort of goes out the window when you've been the victim or you believe you are. Let's flip it over to, okay, mom, what about when your husband, you think you're the victim of his choices and his behaviors? Do you continue to honor that or not? Okay, so don't think Saul's being too far from where we go, okay? Because we got to be careful, and I have done it too. The Bible says I'm supposed to pray for and honor my leaders, not badmouth them. Do I respect that God says to do that? Or do I let my feelings go when that governor, president, senator, whoever it is, makes a decision that I really think... I'm not talking about a moral issue that the Bible speaks directly about life being the sacredness of life. So when I speak, man, abortions, you can't be doing that. However I say it, that's a different story, because I'm talking about an issue in which the Bible addresses, okay? But still, all right, so if your husband is doing something the Bible says he shouldn't do, that's another story. But most of, is David doing anything here the Bible says he shouldn't be doing? Well, yeah, but not against Saul. He lied against God, okay? So, but not against Saul. And so we tend to think, man, how could you, these are the priests of God, are you nuts? Do you remember when somebody just took the wrong incense off the altar and lightning came out from the temple and struck the two boys dead? You know what I'm saying? I mean, these things are in Israel's history, right? And so here he is, and these guards aren't going to do it. But then he looks to the guy who wants promotion. The guy that's looking for a little fame, a little fortune, the stool pigeon, the narc, whatever term you use. But he was doing it for his own benefit because he didn't, like I said, he didn't bother until he found out he can get rewarded for it. Okay? So Saul looks at him and goes, how about you? Would you kill him? Oh, you bet. You bet I would. If this means another promotion, if this means, yeah, I'll compromise on my integrity at work because if I don't, I don't get the promotion. The other guy does. Okay? And he kills 85 of these priests. Now, I want you to understand, when he says dog kill, that Doeg means him and all those under him. Okay? Just like Saul defeated the Philistines by himself, David by himself. David has killed his 10,000s. No, David and his troops have killed. Okay, so we do the same thing. We say the White House, the administration, when we mean a whole bunch of other people, a whole process. And so I want you to understand, he didn't probably do it by himself, but he and his henchmen, I'll put it that way. Imagine this, though. You're just a shepherd. And the boss of the shepherds says, so start killing priests. What do you think about that? Okay, so anyway, he kills these guys, but he doesn't stop there. He wants to be really big in the eyes of the king. He wants a big promotion. He really wants, he goes to Nob, the town, kills men, women, children, and all the livestock. One guy escapes, Elimelech's son, Abiathar, escapes with the ephod, by the way. And if you don't, we'll talk about that, but he escapes with it. How do I know that? The next chapter tells me that. He escapes out of this. We're not sure where, whether he was at, you know, at Saul's palace at the time or he was in Nob. We don't know, but he escapes with the ephod and goes and runs to David. Here's my question. How did he know where David was? So perhaps Saul's right in this sense. You all know, but you ain't telling me. So there may be that or maybe some truth in what Paul said there or Saul said there. Okay, but he goes to David, and David said, oh, I knew it. Let me put it this way. I knew my sin would find me out. I know, David says, there's consequences to sin. Right? You young people, please listen to me. You may not see it directly right now or when you do it, but there are consequences to your sin. As adults, we know better, but we do it anyway. We know there's consequences. But when you're young, you don't tend to think about those. Okay? But there's consequences to sin. Does God forgive? Yes. But there's consequences to that sin. So and to me, the prime example of that, maybe in my own life, okay, is when I did things illegal. When I did that and came in before a judge and all that, and then I paid my price for that. For years, when you fill out a job application, yeah, it cost me jobs. And it cost you some integrity with others who don't who understand that even though you might be forgiven by God, I'm not sure I trust you. It cost you. That moment of passion will cost you. Even if she doesn't bear a child, it will cost you. Because you will never be able to look at the one you marry and say, honey, you're the only. And trust me, when you get married, you will want to tell them that. It will cost sin. David understood as soon as he committed it, and he looks over there and she's talking, goes, this is going to come back to get me. But he didn't do anything about it. Okay? He could have warned them. He said, man, I think you guys should get out of here because the tabernacle was mobile. But he didn't do that. Now I lost my place. I got going there and lost my place. Oh, okay. So David recognizes and he says, you can have shelter with me. So you stay with me. He's sort of trying to make up for, I guess, and I understand that, and you try to. You try to make up for in this life those mistakes you made. You lie to someone. Try to get that trust back. Yeah, that's tough. You can be a young person or a full-grown adult. That's tough. You call into work and say, I can't come in today. I'm sick. Right? Then the boss finds out you were golfing that day. Try to get your boss's trust back. I understand that. And then therefore, you probably would try a little harder to make the boss happy, to show that you're accountable and faithful once you figure that out. And so I think David's doing something we all would do. But the thing I want to sort of focus on today for a while, besides that idea of consequences to sin, but the idea of being self-deceived. You know what the problem was with self-deception? By the definition, you don't know it. When you're deceived, by definition of the word, you don't know it. Now, it's really bad when you're deceiving yourself. What you believe, particularly about yourself, really influences how you perceive the actions of others.
This is Pastor Randy Reams of Kindred Bible Church in Nampa, Idaho. I want to thank you for joining us today for Truths from God's Unchanging Word. This broadcast is an outreach ministry of Kindred Bible Church. I'd like to invite you also to visit our website, kindredbible.org. There you can listen to today's broadcast as well as previous broadcast. If you're being ministered to by the broadcast, I'd like to encourage you to let us know. You can email us at info@kindredbible.org, or you can write to us at Kindred Bible Church, P.O. Box 32, Nampa, Idaho, 83653. And I'd like you also to check us out on Facebook. Look at us over there and give us a like. So again, I want to thank you for listening to Truths from God's Unchanging Word.